Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello and welcome to the Leader Manager Coach podcast. Welcome along. It's Rob Riles welcoming you to another program. Now, in today's edition, I'm really fortunate that we have a guest, somebody that I've been interested in getting on the podcast for some time. He's a young coach. He's definitely, in my opinion, pioneering, and he's got a great story to tell. I get the impression he's extremely humble, which is something that really resonates with Leader Manager Coach. But I'd like you to have a listen to Blaine McKenna. Now, Blaine is a UEFA A licensed coach. He's coached in the USA, Africa, Asia, Oceania, and Europe. And I'm sure you'll put me right if I've missed anything off. I believe he's worked in coach education as well as working in professional leagues, and he's been an academy director. And he's got a wealth of experience at a young age, and he's also an author. And this year he's had a book out called Coaching Abroad, How 8 Coaches Got Jobs and Succeeded Worldwide. So an awful lot done in a short period of time. So welcome, Blaine McKenna. Welcome, Blaine, to Leader Manager Coach.
Thank you for having me. I'm very looking forward to this chat. I'm excited. Always good to chat football cultures, and we've both been in the same boat, so it'll be good to chat.
Absolutely. Well, look, Blaine, what I'd like to do is, I've had the fortune of getting a copy of your book and reading a little bit about how you got into coaching. But I think having a little bit of background about, your early life, obviously from Northern Ireland, and just a little bit about yourself. So, and then we'll lead up into how you actually got into coaching in the first place. So, yeah, fire away.
Yeah, like many people, as soon as I could walk, I was kicking a football. So my whole life just revolved around football. And then eventually you reach a stage where you play at a good level and stuff, but you realize you're not become a professional. And at that stage, I didn't see coaching or football as a real career, because like where I live, there weren't very many full-time coaches in Northern Ireland. And there weren't really many role models to aspire to, because kind of before social media and things, the only real role models you saw were on TV at the top level. And that was kind of not a realistic objective for a lot of people. So just as time went past, like my mum encouraged me to go to university. So I went there. I wasn't very good academically, but as soon as I started learning about sport, like linked to science and things, that's when I really got a buzz from it. And I progressed through there. And that's when I got an opportunity at the end of my first year at sports science degree. I got an opportunity to go and coach in America. And then I saw so many people in America in full-time jobs, people like me. And then I realized that this was a real career. This is something you can really build towards. And as soon as I came back from there, set myself the goal of working in 5 countries and becoming the academy director of a professional club abroad. And then after doing my master's degree, I set off and coached in Kuwait for Arsenal Soccer Schools in the Middle East. And that was kind of my first full-time venture abroad. And from there, just doors open. You know how it is, doors open. And kind of here I am today after working in 11 countries and five continents.
Okay, well, an interesting question. Why 5 countries, Blaine? Any reason?
I don't know. It's just because before I went to America, I'd never traveled much, because when we went on holiday, it was just around kind of the mainland of Ireland. We never really ventured too far. And then as soon as I went to America, and the travel bug got me, traveling to different places, learning about new things. It was all very exciting. And then I came back, I kind of just set these countries. I had it in my mind. Like in my study, I put pictures of the countries I want to work in and have like pictures of them. So visually, I was kind of picturing myself doing this. And there's obviously pros and cons to that in terms of working towards long-term goals. I wasn't really living in the moment of where I was, but like I had so much ambition. I was young. I wanted to travel the world like through football. And I realized that this was a real opportunity for me to do it. And like it's been a life-changing experience.
So football and travel were two things that came together that as a synergy created the opportunity for you and the drive and the pull really for you to go on that journey. Is that pretty true?
Yeah, and I think it was just perfect timing as well, because it was coming at a stage where more opportunities were starting to appear abroad in terms of, whereas years before it might not have been as easy to do it, but the world's a bit, it became a bit more of a smaller place before COVID. Yeah. and then more opportunities were opening up. So it's just kind of it came at the perfect time. And yeah, combining those two things, like we're so fortunate that football is a global game. It can take you anywhere in the world. And the thing is, like in my bubble in Northern Ireland, I was never going to make a full-time career out of it. It was going to be very difficult. Whereas as soon as I started opening my mind to different ideas, different countries, that's when the opportunities started to present themselves. And yeah, it's been an amazing journey.
So I do know that one of the ways that young coaches, and it's often young players who may or may not be, or who probably are just below, or this is the common story from my experience, young players who are at or about academy stroke professional level, maybe haven't made it, maybe have struggled, and look for opportunities, and the opportunity to coach in the USA is something that's, a relatively common pathway, Blaine. Although, as we've already talked about, not everybody is courageous enough, let's be blunt about it, to actually take the jump and leave home and family. But you obviously did that. What was that initial experience like of coaching in the States as a, as a young green guy who's just getting going in his coaching career? What was that like?
Yeah, it was really exciting because it was just for the summer, so it was only like a month or two. But going out there, like we're coaching a different place every week. We're traveling around, we're seeing different towns, and just like the kind of experiences, the people you met, like-minded people from coaching. I'd never really experienced that before in my environment back at home. So like that was exciting in itself. And then like I was coaching in Montreal in Canada as well, just like one of the big cities. I went down coaching near New York City, and the family I stayed with in Connecticut, they organized like a helicopter flight all over New York City for me. And that was just like, that just completely blew my mind. I was like, this is the career for me. This is all right. You're these kind of things all the time. So yeah, it was really exciting. And the main thing was it just opened my mind that there are opportunities out there, because before that, I didn't believe it was a real career. And that was a big turning point.
No, it's great, and it's a great little story. So at that point, in terms of your coach education, for those who are listening and people are thinking, do you know what? I mean, this is something I kind of like to look into. Had you got your A license at this point, or were you kind of still on the journey towards that?
When I first went to America, I was only 18, so I'd done the level two, and I was just at the end of the first year at university. But in terms of going to America, it was quite a good place to go because culturally, it didn't take as much of an adaptation. Like the main thing for me was just living away from home for an extended period for the first time. That was kind of the biggest challenge, and also actually language as well. Like the language you use in terms of like soccer cleats, the terminologies are very different. Because I remember one time I asked a young boy to go and tackle someone. And he wiped them out with an American football tackle because that was just completely. And I was like, wow. So it
Yeah,
just
I
made me
read that.
realize the importance of having a common language and things. So that was an eye opener.
That's great. I mean, I think there's a look, people can use all kinds of psychological excuses why not to do something. And I think, look, as much as you're humble about it, the fact that you just decided to jump into it at 18, you were a level two coach, you just decided to take that step. It's a massive lesson. But no, it's absolutely great, and obviously that gave you the bug, if you like, to travel and to further your coaching. So where did you go next? What was it next?
So I came back and then I had a couple of years to finish my degrees and things at university. So then I finished my sports science degree and I finished my master's degree. And then I got my B license during that time as well. And that's when 3 days after presenting my master's research, I went to Kuwait in the Middle East with Arsenal Soccer Schools. And like even before that, there was so much doubt around it. Like 2 months before I was due to land there, a mosque got blown up by terrorists. And everyone's like, you can't go there, it's not safe. And that was basically due to media propaganda at the time. So yeah, it was a real eye-opening experience because it's very different in terms of going to America. There are adaptations you need to make and things, but going to the Middle East was very, very different culturally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you were doing your sports science, was that something that you thought you may go down that track? Because obviously there's similarities, and there's a coaching aspect, to or involvement in that. Were you maybe thinking more down the sports science route at that point, or were you open to anything?
Yeah, well, the thing that was so good about the sports science was it taught you a number of different disciplines. So you're looking at like exercise metabolism, nutrition, biomechanics, sports psychology, strength and conditioning. So that was a real great underpinning in terms of it made me realize what I was really passionate about and what I wanted to specialize in for my master's degree. And it also helps as well when you're working in professional clubs with multidisciplinary teams. You can kind of understand different elements of it. So like, I came through that, and then I realized it was a toss up whether the master's degree in sports nutrition or the master's degree in sports psychology. And for me, just like sports psychology extends into all areas of life, and it links so closely to coaching. And that was the thing that I was most passionate about, and that passion still burns alive today.
Okay, brilliant. And then, so after Kuwait.
Went to Beijing,
Right.
so that was a kind of coach educator position. So as you go across the journey, like you start as a football coach, you build more experiences and things. And like the most exciting thing about that was obviously I'd heard of Beijing, the Olympics and things. It was kind of one of those like iconic type cities, and it was also an opportunity to deliver coach education with Premier Skills, which was a link between the Premier League and the British Council. So that was kind of one of the things that excited me a bit to do a bit of work. And like that was at the beginning of the boom of Chinese football as well. So that's when all the top players were starting to go there. There was more money being pumped into the game because the president of the country had changed the plan to host and win the World Cup. So there was lots of schools around the country were investing heavily in football. There was a massive surge of coaches going there, and it was an exciting time in Chinese football.
And one of the things that I've read about in your book, and you've already touched on, and I want to kind of bring out a little bit further, is the language. So in Kuwait, I believe that there was quite a good ability from the for the Kuwaitis to speak English. If I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong. But in China, that was a little bit of a different issue. Is that correct, Lane?
Yeah, and then again, so I said America was a quite smooth transition. Kuwait was to an extent as well because everyone spoke English, because a lot of people that worked in the shops were foreigners, and they spoke really good English. And just the way I was looked after there and things was very comfortable. But when I went to Beijing, that was the first time I'd had a real culture shock in terms of just the way life was in Beijing. Everything was very hectic. People had to get places. Like, it was very, very chaotic. And the language, it was the first time I worked with translator as well. And like it was brilliant because we had like 18 full-time like European coaches. So it was a great learning environment. You're surrounded by great coaches that are aspiring to go on the great things, and many of them have in the professional game. So that was a great experience. And like, there's one translator I had, this guy Kevin was brilliant. The first time I met him was in the back of a taxi, and I knew I was in trouble right away because he didn't understand a word I was saying in my thick accent. And like he fell asleep on my shoulder as well, so he fell asleep in the back of the car on my
Great.
shoulder. And we went into the session, and I was trying to explain to them like our session design is very good because we don't have to pick up any cones to transition in the between exercises. Everything's arranged. Next thing, I turn around, he's asked all the kids to run around and pick up
Pick the
all the
cones up.
cones, and I had to set up the whole
Better
session
off.
again. But like that's my fault. Like if I'm not clear enough for him to understand me, that's ultimately my fault. And yeah, it's a great experience. Learn with translator. It helps you be more concise, develop a common language, and try and use visual techniques as well. So use tactics boards, cones, and then also yeah, just you got to explain. You're really well organized to explain things, but like it's a great experience.
Absolutely. And I resonate very much, Blaine, with what you say there. Having when I was in Bangladesh, the one or two of the local coaches spoke one or two words, but the players, the young boys, they didn't speak a word of English. And it really challenges you in your coach communication to it. And initially you're thinking, wow, this is a struggle, but you have to develop strategies, don't you, to get your message over. And it really, I found that such a real positive. I just used to, I developed buzzwords. I learned odd key phrases that I could. And I don't know about you, but it develops a great deal. I probably got more respect from that than I did from anything else, really. Just the fact that they thought, wow, and they used to laugh at me. So it broke the ice because I'd say in Bangla, I'd say, whatever I was just things like close down or you know, right, switch on or maybe one or two things. And obviously there's a little connotation of whether it's correct or not, but whether it was or not, the lads loved it, you know, and it helps, yeah?
Yeah, and it shows me you want to stay there long-term as well, because there's so many foreigners coming to the countries, they want short-term contracts to make money or to use the position to springboard them onto other things. But like, if you're respecting their culture, if you're learning their language, then they'll buy into it a lot more and you can create that direct connection. And you can also bypass the translator sometimes if it's like basic things, because obviously translation takes a long time if you're doing it every single time. So yeah, it definitely creates that culture and breaks the ice.
So just touching on culture, look, it is a massive thing, and there's a definitely a need to understand the culture that you're going into. You talk about that in your book, and I've experienced coaches who struggled with culture or didn't want to, couldn't, I don't know, didn't embrace, if that's the right word, Blaine. It obviously, you know, yourself, you've obviously, you know, bought into that in a big way. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had the experiences you've had. What was that like in somewhere like China, which, you know, I mean, culturally, you know, people could say, well, they're pretty, not 100% opposite to the UK, but there's obvious differences, isn't there?
Yeah, there's huge differences. And like, again, that's one of the main reasons coaches fail abroad, is because they don't respect the culture. Like, they come into a country and they expect to do things exactly the way it's done at home. And if you approach it that way, you can't get the best out of the local people. And if you can't get the best out of the local people in these roles, you can't succeed. Because the vast majority of people you work with, the players, local staff, that you need them to buy into you as a person and get them on side. Otherwise, you have absolutely zero chance of succeeding. So like, the starting point for me, and like, as you get older, as you experience more different cultures, you make mistakes. Like in the Middle East, I went to shake a woman's hand, which you shouldn't be doing in the Middle East. Only when she offers her hand to you.
Right.
Like how you greet people, the starting point.
Yeah.
Like, that's massive. When you meet the president of the club, you got to approach him in a certain way. Otherwise, you'd be the first playing home. So
yeah,
it's just understanding these things, because like, you need to understand, respect it. That's a starting point. And then build a connection with the people, because when a foreigner comes in, they might have never worked with a foreigner before. So they might feel like under their job's under threat.
Yes.
Or they might have had negative experiences in the past, and they're not as trusting when people come from other countries. So the main thing is develop a human connection with them first, because only then will they buy into your ideas. You can't come with ideas to come and show who you are as a person, and then eventually they'll try and buy into what you're trying to do. But even in your first session, like if you go into a local school in China and you start asking questions, you're going to be met with silence, and you're not going to get anything from that session.
Right.
Because their education system, they've been sitting in the classroom. That's a one-way process. The teacher gives them all the information that they retain. Like, they don't ask questions. They don't answer questions. There's no group work.
Wow.
So right away, that has a massive impact on your coaching environment. And then also just the saving face and the hierarchies, all these kind of things. All of this feeds into your environment. And you need to understand that, because you can make change in terms of the national culture is there to be respected. Within your environment, you can change things, but it takes time, because in Asia, in many parts of Asia, their idea of a great coach, is someone who's a dominant figure, someone who has all the answers. And if you start asking questions, if you start giving them a say in how things are done, they'll think you're indecisive, and they'll maybe think you don't know what you're talking about. So right away, you have to be a little bit more authoritarian than you typically would, just to get people on side that you know what you're talking about. And then over time, you can start trying to create an environment where they feel safe to answer questions. But then again, you've got the cultural factors bubbling under the surface that they don't want to lose face by getting the answer wrong in front of the rest of the group. So you've really got to work on that. And it takes a long time, but eventually, after you've understood the culture, after you've learned about it, and you've identified which of your ideas can help improve performance within that environment, you can start to tweak things, but it's a process, and you really need to think it through very carefully.
You've really, really summed up beautifully there, Blaine, and I resonate again with so much, having had an experience in Asia. And that, yes, I can distinctly remember trying to be friendly and inclusive, and thinking, they're not really, is it me? Is it them? And I think you've hit the nail on the head, Blaine, is that they are looking at you as the you know, if you are the head coach, they were looking at me as they wanted me to give them the answers and to actually tell them what to do and to ask them to do this, that, and the other, come back and not to. And it took a while. And even at the end of, you know, after a year, they weren't comfortable with responsibility beyond the simplest things. They were much happier doing simple things, coming back, having the box ticked rather than stretching themselves. And I think your description of saving face, which you talk about in your book as well, about the was it the grandfather or the parent, your story, which it's a great story, maybe you can tell that, but you've got it, and it underlines and exemplifies the need for cultural understanding to in order to succeed. You can be the greatest coach in the world, but if you don't oil the wheels with that understanding, you're going to struggle, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like literally what you just said there. One of the coaches that won titles in Asia, he said there's a million better coaches than me in the world, but there's not many coaches that can understand the religious requirements of the players, the cultural requirements, and how to get the best from that. Because, like, ultimately, that's what's going to determine your success in foreign countries.
Absolutely. I think, and just on that, and one of the things that worked so well when I was in Asia was Friday was their prayer day, so they all went to the mosque, and so we used to do a really light training session on a Friday morning, and I'd make sure that by the right time they were all finished, they could all go and get showered, get their, you know, the costume on, and go. And I, you know, I actually used to go to the mosque with them, and I actually found it a beautiful experience, really. And that in itself, that was like a respectful thing, that they saw that as an ultimately respectful thing, and that gave me so much leeway, Blaine, to with them. And again, that comes back, doesn't it, to an understanding of the environment that you're in.
Yeah, that's brilliant because many foreign coaches can come in and say, "You're a professional sports person. Why are you getting up at 5 a.m.? Like, why are you eating this? Why are you doing that? The day before a game, what are you doing that for?" And right away, you've completely lost them. Whereas the approach you took, they'll respect you for that. And right away, they're going to be listening a lot more to you. They're going to be buying into what you're trying to do a lot more than if you hadn't have taken that approach. So, as I said again, that's a starting point. It's developing on a human level first
Yeah.
before the football.
Yeah, absolutely. What was it like? And this is a big question for everybody who, and I think for everybody who goes abroad and works abroad, and what was it like for you when you left home, you know, for a long term thing or first time? What kind of emotions did you go through, and any doubts and all that kind of thing? Because I don't believe anybody does this kind of thing without going through some kind of emotional struggle or turmoil at some point. What was it like for you?
Yeah, well, the starting point is the airport's the worst part. Like saying goodbye to your family at the airport when you know you're not going to see them for a prolonged period of time. Like, there's always tears. Like, that's always a very difficult moment, and like it never gets easier. And even over time, that gets harder as well because life changes, and that's very, very difficult. But in terms of like, especially when I was going to Thailand, I was academy director of a professional club at the age of 25. I've never got that opportunity back in the UK. So there was massive imposter syndrome in terms of like, I only got the job because I helped a physio with his A license coursework a year before. And like, these kind of jobs don't get advertised. So like, I was very fortunate to get that because I helped someone without asking for anything in return. And like, going in there, it's very, very stressful. Like, especially where I was in northeastern Thailand. Like, there were very, I didn't, day to day, I didn't see any foreigners, no one spoke English. Like, it was a very, very interesting environment that felt like all eyes are on you, kind of people want you to feel things coming in, working for the big club in the region. Like, it was a very, very difficult transition. And I made lots of mistakes early on because I was still learning. Like, I was 25, I was still learning about coaching. I was still learning how to do things. Like, you know what, being an academy director, it's a very intense job. And also the fact that I was hired as a quick fix as well, because the president's son was the academy director before. And like he had made a number of mistakes in terms of he'd linked up with another club to use their 17-year-olds to play in the Thai Youth League for us. But then he got rid of the coach, and a lot of the players left after that because they wanted to play for that coach. And they moved the 15-year-olds up into the 17-year-olds age group, and they're competing. Our first game is against Buriram United, who are one of the biggest clubs in Thailand. They recruit all around the country. Thousands of players turn up. They bring them in, they house them, they educate them. Whereas they're all 17 as well. Whereas we had the best 15-year-olds from our region because we didn't have any facility, like accommodation facilities and things at that stage. So like initially the results weren't good. And in this area of the world, like that's basically the barometer for success. People just look at results. They can't see the
All the time, all
bigger
the time.
picture. Yeah, for numerous reasons. So, and the only reason I really survived that was because the president's son had been raised in New Zealand. So he understood that my approach was very different than what had been done before. But it's only because he'd been outside that environment. If he had been only been within that one environment, like I could have been sacked after a couple of games because ultimately they need a scapegoat. When things are going wrong, the person at the top's never going to take responsibility. So they just get rid of the person in charge. But
I know.
thankfully, we survived the first 8 months to get through that season because when we arrived, the season already started. So I couldn't register any new players. So we got through those first 8 months, got the players into the right age groups, and then immediately results improved and you're a hero. But it's just literally because the players weren't in the right age groups. And we tried to change a lot of things on the side as well, because in Asia, all they focus on education is such a big focus, and they see sport as a massive distraction to that. But we gave scholarships. So eventually we had housing facilities. We gave scholarships to study at university alongside playing, and the grades improved alongside playing football, which because we really reinforced the importance of it, because so many academies weren't reinforcing the importance of it. So their grades were suffering because they're playing so much football, because no one was actually checking their grades and making sure that they're doing the right thing. So like we factored in all these kind of things. And like even in the countryside as well, we had three players end up in a motorbike accident in 1 week. So then we had to renovate the truck to give them a safer way to get to the pitch, because like thousands of young people die every year in the roads here. So like there's so many different elements to it, and just learning about the cultural things, it was a huge challenge initially. And then also living in a place where I didn't have any friends outside of work. Like it was just the Thai staff. I met that I'd speak to the foreign head coach of the first team, but there's always a disconnect sometimes between the academy and the first team, because like everyone's very busy. We train at the same time and things. So yeah, outside of work, it was just 24/7. I couldn't really escape it. I'd be going out in town, people would be taking pictures of me just because they recognized me from the club. Like it was a very lonely existence. Like some days off, I'd just fly to Bangkok just to kind of escape that bubble. So
Really?
like psychologically, it was very difficult. But I knew I had to keep maintaining the relationship with the president's son. So Sundays were game day in the Thai Youth League. It was always very stressful. And my whole life, like I'm not a big drinker. I'd never go out much because as a coach, you can't really. But every Sunday evening, I go out and have some drinks with the president's son. Number one, to keep him on side. But then also, I just need that release from the job because it was all encompassing.
And you touch on a number of things there. One of the things is downtime. And again, I think that's a key, it's a key aspect of being able to or needing to manage that, Blaine, isn't it? Because they are the times when you start to think about family, you start to think back home. If it's not, it's not, you don't always look, you don't always live in a place where it's certainly not perfect. You might not have many friends around. People go back to their own families or dormitories or whatever it is. Sometimes, your food's it's not what you're used to, and all those kind of things come into play. So, I think managing your own downtime and your whole life again is a key thing to longevity, isn't it?
Yeah, and just even hearing people speak your own language as well. Sometimes I listen to podcasts just to hear people speak English, because around me it was 100% Thai all day every day. And like the key thing is, like you should never go to a country and expect people to adapt to you and make you feel comfortable. Like you're the one that's decided to come here, so you got to try and embrace it as much as possible. And for me, like now I live in Phuket, and when I go to the beach in the mornings, like it's just all foreigners, it's all Europeans. I kind of miss that northeast element of Thailand, like the music, the smells, the sounds. Like it's the best way to immerse yourself and understand and learn about a country. And then also you had to speak the language every day as well. So you pick things up. But like, it's the best cultural experience like I've ever had in my life. But in the book, one of the coaches kind of warns you about going to places like that. You have to, like, if you want a nice, comfortable life, then going to America is a lot more easier to adapt, more comfortable socially, you'll be fine. And even in like major cities within Asia, like you go to the main cities and you'll meet people. There'll be lots of expats, you can do things. But when you get posted in a place far away from the city where there aren't many foreigners and things, like it takes a certain type of person to be able to manage that because like it's not easy. But I was at a great stage in my career where I was just 100% career focused. That was the only thing that mattered in my life. And at that time it was okay. But like doing those kind of things now, it's kind of the way I've changed tack a bit in terms of like living in Phuket. It's a lot more comfortable. There's more expats around. It's a more comfortable lifestyle. But like back then I was ready for that. And like, I don't regret any of the experiences because they've made me into the person I am today and like where I am today. So yeah,
Absolutely.
amazing cultural experiences.
Absolutely. And again, I think you've hit on another great point. You don't know where you're going to fully. Yes, you've an idea, you've a vision, you know, you get told all you. And again, you know, you mentioned this in your book. Look, with the greatest respect to everybody, the things you get told are not always the absolute reality that you're going into. And when I look back, Blaine, the fondest memories, the greatest experiences, and the most meaningful times were absolutely nothing to do with glitzy hotels, nothing to do with shiny airports, nothing to do with great facilities, but everything to do with pure, unaltered reality of life at its most real, really, with people living their own lives in busy cities, with, you know, look, let's be honest about it, poverty around you, tragic circumstances around you, people struggling, and, you know, a lack of facilities compared to what you're used to in the UK. And but in reality, as you said, those are the things that really make you, and are imprinted upon your memory, aren't they?
Yeah, it teaches you so much as well. Like when I was in Malawi, like that was one of the poorest countries in the world per capita, the World Bank said. And they're the happiest people you've seen in your lives. When the other teams are playing, they'd be singing at the side of the field. Like it just teaches you to put things into perspective. Like you learn so much from these different experiences. And also back home, people will tell you like, oh, this country's bad, that country's bad. But when you go and experience it for yourself, you realize it's nothing like the perception and the media and different things will tell you. So like it just teaches you to be open-minded, and that's like one of the best lessons you can have. Like travel is the best life experience you can have. It just teaches you so much when you leave your own bubble and everything you've been taught to believe in, and you realize that there are strengths in other cultures and the way they do things, and you can learn from it.
So just how would you compare your experience of the Malawian culture, the African culture, compared to the Asian culture? And you know, maybe just tell us how you got into Malawi in terms of your coaching journey into there, because that's a nice little aspect to your journey too.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I just basically saw on Twitter about an academy in Malawi. So I kind of reached out to them, and they encouraged me to come in for a month to do coach education, to take things in the academy. And that was a great experience. Like they're making real change in people's lives there. So they scout all around the country. They bring the best players in, they give them education, they give them food. And it's just some of the constraints you're dealing with there. Like some trialists came in, and then we asked them for your translator after training how they felt, and they're like their feet felt so heavy because they've never played in football boots before. Their tummies felt so full because they've never been so well fed before
Dude.
playing. They'd never played on grass. They'd never left their hometowns. So it's just factoring all these things in. And then also you look at their birth certificate and things, and it probably wasn't actually their birth certificate. Like their
No.
ages have been altered. You can see in the pen changed it
Yeah.
because they wanted to get recruited for this academy, which would change their lives.
All
So
got beards, yeah. They're 15 and got beards, huh?
Yeah, so that was an amazing experience. And then we did coach education with some local coaches. Then we went to watch them coach in the satellite center, and yeah, it was just such an amazing experience. And then yeah, I had similar experiences, But I wasn't really there long enough to understand the culture in real depth. Like, I've understood about the realities of the positions they're in, but I know the Asian culture a lot more in depth,
Right.
and there are a lot of similarities and things, but obviously there's differences in terms of the constraints and things, and depends what country you're in terms of, like, China is very different from Thailand, South Africa is very different from Malawi, so there's lots of different factors to bear in mind.
Okay, right, your book. So, I was elated when I saw that you'd written a book, and it's a perfect. I thought, well, I've got to get that anyway, and then that's obviously was the catalyst to bringing you on the podcast, Blaine, because, you've got everything that's of interest to us here. So, what was the inspiration first of all behind it, and then tell us about writing it, because as we've talked about briefly before we re started recording, look, to anybody who hasn't written a book, who thinks it's easy, well, it ain't. So tell us about the inspiration and then actually doing it, because it's quality.
Yeah, well, a couple of years ago, I wrote a blog on coaching abroad, and it just seemed to resonate with a lot of people. I got a lot of messages, and like on Twitter and things, on LinkedIn, I get constantly people asking me about how can I get jobs abroad, how can I coach abroad, and I just felt like that was the thing that resonated most with people, and then also for myself as well. Like, I wrote it for a younger version of myself coming through university. Like, this book would have been gold dust for me back then in terms of, like, actually how you go and get these jobs, because so many people are stuck in their bubbles, their networks within one place, they're not sure how to make that jump to other countries, and also the fact of, like, how you succeed there. Because, and also I looked in the books and things, there were no books on coaching abroad. There's like one book on playing abroad, but it didn't really go into as much detail. So, and also for me, I didn't want to write it purely by myself. I wanted to learn from other coaches that have been in similar positions, so gaining different perspectives. And also people that are at different moments in their career. So some that are a bit more, I've been coaching for 50 odd years abroad and things, and people have just kind of gone out in the past 10 or so years. So I wanted to gain different ideas, different elements from it, and just basically create an ultimate guide that can help people bring their football ambitions to reality, because there's so many people who aren't getting the opportunities they deserve at home. And the reality is, if you want to work full time in football, you're going to have to leave home. So this is kind of what I wanted to do, a step by step. It talks about lifestyle, how do you adapt to different countries. There's two culture chapters on culture in terms of, like, managing up, the things you have to deal with that, like, will blow your mind, some of the things you have to
I
deal with.
know. Tell me about
And
it.
then the other chapter on culture is about how to adapt your coaching approach. Like, do your sessions fit in all these countries? How do you deal with individuals one to one? How do you deal with groups and get the best from them? Because that's ultimately what you have to do to succeed. And then we kind of couple that with a coaches chapter, then an educational chapter. It could be networking, social media, and then building up towards looking at how you develop your own profile. So, like, what does your CV look like? How do you improve your performance? How do you develop a reputation in the game to get jobs? And then basically building from there. But it all kind of came together during COVID when I had the time to do it, and football kind of stopped. Talks about becoming an assistant technical director in a country of 100 million people, and then COVID just kind of shut everything down. Before that, I was meeting people in multiple countries, thinking the world's my oyster, and like everything just the football world kind of fell apart for a while. So, which has kind of worked out well for me. I was able to write the book. I was able to kind of take a different direction in my life, because before I was constantly thinking, I have to get this job, I have to do this, I have to do that. I was always living in the future. I wasn't really living in the moment. So I kind of changed chasing long-term goals, because, like, in football, there's such a lack of stability. It brings so much anxiety, thinking, oh, can I get this job? Like, what are the COVID requirements to get in? Like, there's so many different elements to it. And I've just basically started living from three values. And if I'm doing these values, the link goals link these values every day, that's what's going to bring me happiness. And sometimes you think you're working in football to try and sort of impress other people to build your credibility, when it's not always necessarily the thing that makes you happiest. So it's kind of just taking a change in tact. And yeah, it's brought about a book. And it's brought about a different mindset in terms of how I approach things.
You know what, Blaine? It's wonderful to hear some of the things you've just said, because you set out to write a book, and you took advantage of an opportunity when a lot of people would, it was easy to sit down and bemoan the fact that you couldn't coach because of the pandemic, and you made gold out of gold dust, really, a kind of thing, or you created something when it was, you had the opportunity. And you also invited other people to join that, and it sounds, well, it is a great project. I mean, I've got the fruits of it here. It's fantastic, and like you say, there's not a dearth of things out there like it to inspire people. So I'm hoping this podcast will help with that. And were the times when you were writing it that you thought, do you know what, this isn't going to get done? Were there any challenges that you can remember and thought, crikey, what have I taken on? Anything like that?
Yeah, just finding a publisher who believes in you, because like it's difficult. I'm not from an academic background. Like, I wasn't in a very high class in school, so like for me to write a book is, yeah, it's an unbelievable achievement. But yeah, there were loads of ups and downs. So initially you're so enthusiastic, you have ideas in your head, but like constantly things are always changing. Like, this idea is not going to work, the publisher doesn't like that, and you got to constantly adapt and things. And also just trying to keep in touch with the coaches. So our coach got sacked during it, so I had the story up to date, and then the coach got sacked, and trying to keep communication with these guys and things, because obviously head coaches are very busy, so you don't want to take up too much of their time. So there are lots of kind of things like that, and just basically the ideas were coming and going. But the thing is, I'm proud of it. And even the main thing was, I was just trying to help as many people as possible. I wanted to try and make the book as cheap as possible, because if you want to make money from things, you create an online course. But I wanted to write a book because that stands the test of time, and it's more accessible for more people. And basically, I just want to try and help as many people as possible bring their football ambitions into reality, which will ultimately, like, it changes my life, and I want others to have that experience as well.
Well, I certainly think it's going to do that. But I've got absolutely no doubt, and one of the reasons that I wanted you on is that so that we can promote it unreservedly, because it needs to be done. There are thousands of people, young people, undoubtedly, who would absolutely love to kind of feel that they could do something like you've done. And look, as with everything, not everybody's going to do it. We know that, and we're not trying to get everybody to do it, but those who have got the desire to do so, this book will inspire, it will educate, and it will actually show you a pathway. Look, there's no guaranteed pathway, and nobody's going to get it laid out for them step by step, but it's, you've illustrated beautifully about, look, just take the first step and the next one will open up for you if you're courageous enough to face the first step. And I think your life journey exemplifies that, Blaine, in a lovely way. So first of all, congratulations on the book, and it is available from Amazon, isn't it? And I'm sure there's possibly one or two other places as well, but I think that's probably the simplest way to get it, isn't it, Blaine?
Yeah, you can get it in paperback and Amazon UK, US, Australia, and Kindle as well. But one of the main things as well is, like, you don't have to go abroad for the rest of your life. You can go and do a summer placement like I did and see if it's for you. So just kind of approaches it that way as well. And then you can make the decision about what you want to do for the rest of your life. But I just feel that when you've had these different experiences, it's only then you know what you want from life. Like, you've got to step outside your comfort zone and the things that you've known your whole life to really learn about yourself and then see what you want from the world.
Absolutely. And, there's yourself and, Matt Ward.
Yeah, I know Matt Ward, yeah.
And obviously there's yourself and Matt. And Matt, Matt's the similarities between yourself and Matt in terms of Matt's written a book on his journey, and I know he's helped a lot of people, and I certainly kept in touch with Matt myself, and I was on his podcast, so he's done some great things, and I see you also being a leading light in this. You're young and blimey, to do this at your age, mate, it's fantastic. And what's having heard you just say that COVID taught you to sit back, and gosh, I resonate so much with it, as you live in the football bubble and you're always thinking, right, what's next, and is that opportunity open, and networking and thinking, right, what's my next stage, my next qualification, and do I need to be doing this? And it's so unstable at times that you're always got that open mind about where to go next. But the pandemic situation seemed to kind of, you embrace that in a way. You didn't come home in that time, you stayed abroad, is that right?
Yeah, so I was in Cambodia. So I left Singapore in November, and I left there without having another club lined up. So I went to meet people in the Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, and I was in Cambodia, and then the storm started kicking off, and this guy called me in New Zealand. He's like, come and live with me for 6 months. So I flew to New Zealand, lived in his bedroom, one of his bedrooms for 6 months, and I created online courses, and that's when the kind of the book idea came through as well. So like, I was very fortunate. But then again, that's because like I went there originally to do a PhD, and I was observing local coaches, and just like, in the rain, hail, snow, I didn't know who this guy was, but like I helped him, and then eventually he helped me years later. So it's just helping people, and then that'll create opportunities for you, and you never know when they'll repay that favor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what, okay, here's one, and maybe you can just bat this one off because maybe it's a false question after what you've said, but what's next for you, Blaine? Have you got anything else lined up that you want to share, or you're not sure, or is it just take it day by day still?
I've definitely changed. Like before COVID, I was completely different. I was purely career oriented. I was chasing things. Whereas now I have a lot more balance. Like I'm living in a place that I love at the moment, and I've been coaching. I stepped away from full-time coaching. I'm doing a bit of part-time coaching in an international school, and to be honest, that's been the best thing for me because I've fallen back in love with it again. Because sometimes when you're in it all the time, it can wear on you a lot. So I've taken that step back. I've been a full-time offer for a while, for a year or two, and then now I'm coaching part-time, and I feel like I love it that much that I might eventually go full-time in an international school in that kind of environment, because like it's a lot more stable. Because the people I've been talking to, I was going to join a federation with someone, he's not in that job anymore. I was going to join a professional club, he got sacked after 3 months, and I'm thinking to myself, is that really the lifestyle I want? Do I want to be living in my suitcase 3 months here, 4 months there? Or would I much rather go into an environment where, because my passion is sports psychology as well, in an international school environment, I can use my sports psychology plans, I can build a football program that can make a difference in the lives of young people, and I can have that stability. And also the fact that like the holidays are different. When you work in football full time, you barely get any holidays. You're there to service the job. Whereas international schools, it's a lot more balanced. You get your summers off, you get your public holidays, like you get a lot of time off because you just get the school holiday. So I'm still coaching, I'm still loving it. And that doesn't mean I'm any less passionate as a coach, because I'm not coaching at the highest level possible, but like it's just helped me fall back in love with it again. And I think that's the path I might go down, to be honest.
Well, that's a beautifully explained and a vulnerable answer as well, because I fully hear you. And to actually stand up and say within a professional circle, look, I'm not sure whether I want to do this full time. You'd get looks from people who work in pro clubs, like they would think you've lost the plot, you know, thinking, well, where's your ambition? You're not in at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're leaving before three, you're interested in other things. You're not for us, you know, that is still a mantra in the pro circles, and you know, I think we both recognize that, and it's lovely to hear, because what's more authentic, Blaine, than your journey of life following your passion, which at this current stage you're saying I've fallen back in love or with the thing that used to fire me up as a young man, and I've found a balance in life that just feels right. I mean, it sounds like, you know, a great place to be, pal, for me. So, you know, respect.
Yeah, and it's just based on all previous life experiences. Like I've lived in a city that basically left me hospitalized. Like I couldn't drink, I couldn't eat, my throat closed because the pollution in one country I was in. Like it was a horrible, horrible position to be in. But I was lying in my condo there, thinking, I was by myself thinking, like football can't always be there for you. You need something else in life. Like before, it was just like everything is football. This is my whole life. I don't need anything else. Whereas now you grow older, you experience different things, and you realize like you need more balance. And I can still be in the game. I can just be as passionate as any professional coach at a professional club. I can still be as passionate enough to develop myself and push myself. And eventually I'll keep developing, and I might one day go back in if the opportunity presents itself. But if not, like I've experienced both sides of it. And yeah, it's a much better lifestyle. And I'm living in the moment for the first time ever. I'm not worrying about getting sacked. I'm not worried about, is this job going to come up in the future? I'm basically the happiest I've ever been. And for me, that's success. In itself, it's not about what my job title is, it's not about what my salary is, it's not what about people are saying about me. Like it's just I have contentment with me, and that's like for me now I realize that is the ultimate goal. But I had said that to myself at the start, like I would not have thought that, but just over time you realize that coaching is a tough industry, and I can still coach, but then I can have more balance now, so it's perfect.
Blaine, I actually think that that's almost a perfect way to kind of conclude the podcast, really, because we've started out on the journey. You told us where you started, and now you've come to the full circle at the moment, as far as you've come to this particular point, and brought us to a fabulous point. So I'd like to thank you for your time, Blaine. I'd like to thank you for your book, because it is valuable, and I'll be talking about that, and at every opportunity I'll be telling people to get a hold of it. And if anybody's interested in coaching, no matter how old you are, no matter what your ambitions, and if anything that Blaine said has resonated with you, then look, do yourselves a favor and invest less than a tenner and get yourself a book, because there's something in it for you, I absolutely promise you. And so listen, pal, thanks for coming on. You've been absolutely brilliant, and it's just been a perfect kind of journey through your life. So I'd like to thank you for that, and keep up the great work, mate. And I'll be watching out to see what happens next. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love these conversations, talking to like-minded people that have been in the same position as you. So yeah, I've enjoyed it a lot.
Great stuff. All right, Blaine. Listen, I'll catch you later. Thanks very much.
Well, what a great chat that was with Blaine, and thank you so much, Blaine. It was so enlightening, and it came in a perfect circle, really. We started to chat about Blaine's early life in the beginning of the podcast, and we ended up where Blaine just naturally went on to talk about where he was and how he'd found a real place of peace and contentment and happiness in his life. And there's some fundamental learnings from Blaine's journey that I just wanted to touch on before we close the podcast. The first one is the inherent value of courage. Here's a young man who had the courage to follow his dream. As I said to Blaine, there's many, many, many coaches who say, yes, I'd love to coach abroad, I'd love to do this, I'd love to do that. But when it comes down to it, only a few will. And of course, we recognise that people have different challenges at different stages of life. But one thing you certainly need to follow your dream is courage. But as Blaine's story so beautifully illustrates, if you provide the courage, the universe will provide the rest. You have to face your fears, which is essentially what courage is. And it's not a free ride. There are many challenges, as there are with anything. So listen, choose your cross. You know, you're going to be crucified anyway. Just pick your cross, whichever one it is. Stay at home and be sad and miserable and regret. Or go abroad and face the challenges that you're given. Look, it's not as simple as that. And I'm not criticizing anybody who does not go abroad. But the message is simple from Blaine's story. Every time he left his family, and every time you leave your family and go back, you will have tears welling up inside you. It's tough, but it's a price you pay. Another lesson that comes through from Blaine's story and journey is that it isn't all about qualifications. In fact, qualifications, although necessary, are externally projected onto us by organisations. And they're there for a reason, to allow employers to ascertain the degree of competence that a potential employee may have. They're also there to educate, but it is not all about qualifications. It is about experience and living life. And Blaine illustrates that so beautifully. And I think the greatest thing that he said was that this journey has enabled him to find himself. So through leaving home, following his dream, working hard, taking one baby step after another, he's found a place where he realizes currently that maybe coaching full time with all the pressures of that and the stresses of that is not necessarily where he wants to be right now. But living in a place that he finds happiness and is able to coach in an environment that is really working for him and he can contribute is the real value. It's a great story. It's also a great book, and it's a great example from somebody who's at the cutting edge. Blaine McKenna, thank you very much. True respect. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
The Leader Manager Coach podcast is available via the Leader Manager Coach app. Download it now to access the rich resource of unique, insightful, and educational material to help you on your own journey in football, sport, and life. Leader, manager, coach. For the game. For life. Available now on Google Play and Apple App Store.